to bite off just another little piece of this particular sermon that Jesus is giving. And we'll begin in verse 25. He says, "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye make clean the outside of the cup and of the platter, but within are full of extortion and excess. Thou blind Pharisees, cleanse first that which is within the cup and platter, and the outside of them may be clean also. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees and hypocrite, for ye are like unto whited sepulchres, which indeed appear beautiful outward, but are within full of dead men's bones and of all uncleanness. Even so ye also outwardly appear righteous unto men, but within are full of hypocrisy and iniquity." So this is just one more indictment Jesus brings against the scribes and the Pharisees. It's been very straightforward time and time again over the last several verses of Jesus coming straight at them, calling them blind leaders of the blind, calling them hypocrites, and just calling it like it is. And in this particular indictment, in verse 25, he speaks of them. He uses the analogy of a cup and a platter. That cup and platter in the Greek, that particular phrase that's translated cup and platter, was often used to describe dishes that were used to serve up delicacies or more important meals, you know, like grandma break out the china and Thanksgiving and this sort of thing. Well, this is kind of the ideal here. The image being portrayed here, that of a host offering their guest a meal served in the finest of dishes. That's the idea, which would give the impression that the food and the drink is going to be the best, right? But instead, what they receive is food that is spoiled and undesirable. And let's read it again, verse 25. He says, "For ye make clean the outside of the cup and of the platter, but within are full of extortion and excess." So what Jesus is saying here is, though the scribes and the Pharisees give the impression that they're very spiritual and very devoted to the Lord in all things, the reality of it is it's a front. And that's what he's saying here. It's a facade. Behind the scenes, they're exercising their power and their influence in order to advance themselves, in order to profit. And that's what he's talking about there when he says, he refers to the full being full of extortion and excess. Extortion literally in this context means robbery. And excess, of course, just speaking of their self-indulgence. And so there again, the implication is that they were living high on the hog. They were living very extravagant lives off the resources of the people that they were supposed to be serving. And their ill-gotten gains were put to use for the purpose of their own self-gratification. And so they were essentially fleecing the flock, so to speak. And so he goes on in verse 26. He says, "Thou blind Pharisee, cleanse first that which is within the cup and platter, that the outside of them may be clean also." So he's simply saying the only remedy for their hypocritical practices would be for them to have a regenerated heart, a regenerate heart. When the heart is right, and then the behavior follows, as we well know. If the heart would be right, then the sincerity of their ministry would follow. There would be no indulgent lifestyles amongst them if their hearts were right, is what Jesus is saying. And so Jesus describes here really a very common MO, if you will, of false religious leaders throughout the centuries, becoming wealthy, becoming fat, and really off the proceeds of the ministries that they're involved with, fleecing the flock, fleecing the people that they're supposed to be serving. And it has happened time and time again just through our lifetime. How many times have we seen some television preacher or evangelist seeming to be reaching the masses, seeming to have this tremendous ministry, only to get caught up into some kind of scandal And with further look, discovered that perhaps maybe even millions of dollars of the contributions of the people have gone towards their lavish lifestyles. We've seen it many times, and it's happened that way throughout history. And folks, I'm going to tell you up front, I fear God too much to even remotely misappropriate one penny. I find a penny in the floor back there in the foyer. It's not going in my pocket. I want to find a plate somewhere. You know, I mean, honestly, just the idea of misappropriating God's money for your own indulgence. And it is His money. You know, the tithes and offerings of the people in the house of God, yes, they're giving it, but it's God's money to start with. And so every dime of it, regardless of who gives it, is God's money. And so never mind the potential of being caught by humans, the very moment that you, a preacher or anybody else, were to take that kind of a action, they're already caught because God knows about it. And boy, I'd be scared to death. If I was a child of God, if any person was a child of God doing that, there would be some serious repercussions because of the greed and the indulgence involved with that. But sadly, as Jesus speaks here of the scribes and the Pharisees, they're fleecing the flock, but the truth of the matter is they're wolves in sheep clothing. They're not children of God. They're not. And they're lost, not even knowing the God that they're teaching people about and speaking of. So let's go on to verse 27. It says, he goes into another indictment here. He says, "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, for ye are like unto whited sepulchres, which indeed appear beautiful outwardly, but are within full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness." Now, there's some interesting facts about Jesus' reference to whited sepulchres here, and some things that I really did not totally understand till I studied this out. But a sepulcher, of course, is a tomb or a grave. We're familiar with that terminology. They laid Jesus in a sepulcher. In the ancient Palestinian Jews had the practice of whitewashing those tombs every spring, especially the tombs that were in and around the area of Jerusalem, and they would use what they didn't have paint like we have today, you know, latex and different things like that. Their paint, this particular whitewash, would be made primarily of lime, and it was a mixture of other things with it, and it was essentially to paint the stone. It was just a whitening. It wasn't like paint, what we would think of today, that puts a total coat on it. It would be a whitening of the stone. And the stones outside of where a tomb was carved, or where bodies were laid. And so it was kind of dual purpose. Besides giving the tomb a very nice appearance each spring, more importantly, it would identify that tomb as a gravesite, make it recognizable that someone was buried there. And the purpose of that was people would be traveling to Jerusalem during the Passover festivities and the feast and all that was involved there, which would happen later in spring. And so people would be making their pilgrimage to the area, and not being familiar with the area, would not know exactly where the tombs were, and perhaps they could touch one of the tombs, which would make them ceremonially unclean. Now, Numbers chapter 19, verse 16, Roy will put it up on the screen, but it says, this goes all the way back to the Old Testament law, it says, "Whosoever touches one that is slain with the sword in the open fields, or a dead body, or a bone of a man, or a grave, shall be unclean for 7 days." Now, there are a lot of other things in the law, if you've read your Bibles, you know, that talked about different things that would make you unclean. But even touching a grave would make you unclean for those 7 days, okay? And so to be unclean would mean that you, a person, was not able to participate in any kind of temple ceremonies, particularly the activities of the Passover. So spring, just before the Passover feast, the celebration would take place there in Jerusalem, there would be the practice of whitewashing those tombs, and that would make them stand out and make them identifiable to anybody who was coming into the area. And besides the fact that, again, it made things look nicer. Important to understand that the seasonal rains that had come in early spring, from what I understood reading, would have stopped by now. And those very rains, the seasonal rains, had probably already washed away a whole lot of last year's whitewashing. And so it was also a very appropriate time for them to be taking care of that new thing. And so the phraseology here that Jesus uses would have been especially fitting and timely, because of at that point when he's saying these words, that very location surrounding Jerusalem would have been the whole landscape would have been shining very bright with freshly whited sepulchers all around the area. And so what he's saying here would have, the sun would have brightly illuminated these things, and everybody would have known exactly what he was talking about. The analogy would have not left anything to imagination. They would have clearly understood what he was talking about. You had these freshly attractive whited tombs looking very nice, very appealing to the eye. But within them, and here comes the analogy, within those tombs, there's still the components of death, right? And each and every tomb, just like every grave marker out here at the cemetery, with every marker represents a life and a body that would be in certain stages of decay, which would be unclean, would be smelly, could be putrefying, if you will. And so the whole ideal that Jesus is painting here, the whole picture is that of this pretty setting on the outside and this very ugly situation on the inside, okay? And that, of course, is what he's implying was the condition of the scribes and the Pharisees, presenting themselves to be very nice, very spiritual, having a very clean appearance. Any person looking on would think they were very appealing spiritually. But the truth of the matter is, below the surface, in a place where no one else could see, only God, they were spiritually dead. They stunk spiritually. And so their hearts were unclean, their hearts were contaminated, and just as the passerbys who would inadvertently perhaps touch a tomb, they would have become ceremonially unclean by touching the tomb and be excluded. Because of that, touching that tomb would be excluded from participating in any of the Passover activities, unqualified, if you will, to participate. So were the scribes and the Pharisees unfit to be involved with God's work. And can you imagine this? Think about this. This indictment that Jesus is bringing, he's essentially saying, can you imagine how this set with them? Because he's saying, you're the spiritual leaders. You put yourself in front of people to be the spiritual leaders in all things, all around the temple, all around Jerusalem. You're the ones running the show. You're guardians of the gate, if you will, on spiritual things. And yet you're not qualified yourself to participate. You're defiled. And that's what he's saying. Not only are they not qualified to lead, but they're not qualified to be involved, just as the unclean person wouldn't be qualified in that first 7 days to go into the temple and partake of things. Well, that's the same way with them. They absolutely were not qualified. So with that, we're going to go ahead and read our next text for next week, and then I'm going to touch on one little part of it, and then we'll let you go. So beginning of verse 29, he says, "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! Because you build the tombs of the prophets and garnish the sepulchers of the righteous, and say, if we had been in the days of our fathers, we would have been would not have been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets. Wherefore, ye be witnesses unto yourself that ye are the children of them which killed the prophets. Fill ye up then the measure of your fathers, ye serpents, ye generation of vipers, how can ye escape the damnation of hell? Now, I'm telling you, his words intensify very, very strongly there in those last couple of verses. You serpents, generation of vipers. He'd already called them hypocrites, told them that they were blind, and now he's winding it up pretty strongly here. So without diving into this text at any length, let me just make one point. What Jesus in this particular text has just invited them with is just really a continuation of what had been happening all throughout history with religious Israel. The prophets were the true men of God. You go all the way back, the prophets said of the Bible, they were the true men of God. They had they were the voice of God to the people. God would speak to them, give them the message, they would take it to the people, and they were the real deal. They were legitimately ordained to be proclaiming God's truth to the people. They were the true men of God, qualified to be doing the work that they were doing. Yet, the false religious leaders, which were the fathers of the scribes and the Pharisees and the grandfathers and the great grandfathers, the highly religious, were guilty of killing those prophets. Those prophets were the ones qualified to be doing the work, but yet they killed them, or they imprisoned them in Jeremiah's case and in different situations. And the truth of the matter is, they were the ones that were qualified to be leading. They killed them so they could lead. And so Jesus is just opening up a whole new chapter here of talking about the scribes and the Pharisees and their forefathers and this sort of thing. And so next time we're together, we'll look closely at that. But it's gone from bad to worse with the scribes and Pharisees. Jesus is really laying it on them. So let's go ahead and stand, and we'll be dismissed in a word of prayer. Hope you have a good remainder of the week, and we will be praying. I hope you will as well. For the people that are sick. And hopefully this Sunday we'll have a lot of people well and be back in the house of God. And we'll have a good day one way or another, but hopefully have those people back, okay? All right. Brad, would you lead us in a word of prayer, please, sir?